Now, I remember from about 40 years ago, our local minister at that time gave a sermon about the 10 plagues on Egypt just before the Exodus, and how these were connected to the false and numerous gods that the Egyptians worshipped. I don't have those notes from that time. I know that I'm organized, but I'm not that organized. But it is a fascinating subject to look at. So the sermon title today is Miracle After Miracle. It was interesting when Googling the plagues on Egypt. I put in Egypt and the 10 plagues, and that the first observation I read said the following. Natural explanations have been suggested for most of the phenomena, and then it listed the 10 different plagues. Now, right here at the beginning of this search, God's great power was questioned. I suppose that we shouldn't be surprised in this day and age where God is relegated to the position of has-been or never has-been, or probably in some people's eyes never was, by men who obviously think that they know better than the one who created us all. In 2010, the science correspondent of the Daily Telegraph wrote the following. Researchers believe they have found evidence of real natural disasters on which the 10 plagues of Egypt, which led to Moses freeing the Israelites from slavery in the book of Exodus in the Bible, were based. But rather than explaining them as the wrathful act of a vengeful God, the scientists claim the plagues can be attributed to a chain of natural phenomena triggered by changes in the climate and environmental disasters that happened hundreds of miles away. Well, straight away here, we have two problems with that, even though it is acknowledged that there were, in fact, 10 plagues. First of all, the plagues were attributed to a chain of natural disasters triggered by changes in the climate and environmental disasters that happened hundreds of miles away. What would be the odds of them all happening at the same time and in the same area? And they haven't happened since. Just the usual nonsense that appears to emanate from the mouths of God-defying individuals. And secondly, the correspondent writes, but rather than explaining them as the wrathful act of a vengeful God, typical piece of lazy journalism who makes this assertion without any proof whatsoever. One of many other websites was for Jewish TV, and a rabbi covered the plagues, and he covered them about one plague equaled 1 hour. Now, I only want to cover briefly today, otherwise you'll be here a long, long time. And the specific purpose for doing this is that we can easily see how God struck at the Egyptian gods with miracle after miracle. There's so much information on the internet on this subject that your head can swim with so much availability. But it's very, very interesting, and I hope you will see from this sermon today. And I'll use information from a number of websites like Knowing the Bible, Religious Facts, and Barnes Bible Charts, and others. These plagues showed the people of Israel who the true God was, and how impotent and utterly worthless were the so-called gods of Egypt. The God of Israel showed his people where the real power came from, and not only released them from the grip of the Egyptians, but also showed his ability to provide for his people, as is evident from the story of Exodus. However, before we review these 10 plagues and how they were associated with the hundreds and thousands of different Egyptian gods, let us consider what their purpose was. And I'll give you 5 brief reasons now why they took place. There may be other reasons, but these will suffice in the sermon today. The first reason was to destroy the gods of Egypt. If you turn to Exodus 12, starting in verse 12, Exodus 12, verse 12, we read the following. Exodus 12, verse 12. It says, "For I will pass through the land of Egypt this night, and will smite all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against the gods, all the gods of Egypt, I will execute judgment. I am the Lord." It is interesting to read that to some degree these gods of Egypt were different to the gods of other countries in that they did not expect or require any form of human sacrifice. Nor did they fight with others over religion who were of a different opinion. Yaroslav Czerny, in his work Ancient Egyptian Religions, states on page 39 the following. He says, "It is impossible to sketch a picture of a belief which is uniform and logical in all its details and valid for the whole of Egypt, for such a uniform belief never existed. The Egyptian religion is not the creation of a single thinker, but an outcome of local, political, and cultural divergences, and there was never a strong enough force in Egypt to eliminate all local beliefs or unite them in a general theological system equally binding to Egyptians of all classes and places." And so we can see that it was somewhat chaotic, their view of their gods, which the Egyptians were involved with. And as we will see as we progress, they had so many. As one of the websites stated, "Though Egypt had thousands of gods, many of them overlapping and evolving throughout history, the following," that is the ten plagues, "is a description of the most prominent gods that the plagues would have affected." The second reason I would give you today is that another purpose of the plague was to defeat the Pharaoh of Egypt, who himself was considered a god. Unlike other rulers in the ancient Near East, the Egyptian pharaoh did not merely rule for the gods, but he was literally one of the gods. As far as his physical existence was concerned, Pharaoh had been begotten by Amon-Re upon the Queen Mother. As to his divine power, he was Horus, the son of Hathor. Today, we might find all of that a little bit ridiculous, but we are here dealing with an autocratic individual who assumed such power. However, the plague showed that he was impotent in the face of the true God of Israel. The third reason I would suggest is to show that the religious leaders were impotent in the face of the true God. Let us look at Exodus 7, verses 10 to 12, where we read that the religious leaders did actually have some power. Exodus 7, starting in verse 10. "So Moses and Aaron went into Pharaoh, and he did so just as the Lord commanded. And Aaron cast down his rod before Pharaoh and before his servants, and it became a serpent. But Pharaoh also called the wise men and the sorcerers, so the magicians of Egypt, they also did in like manner with their enchantments. For every man threw down his rod, and they became serpents, but Aaron's rod swallowed up their gods." It shows here that they did have a certain level of ability, obviously as allowed by God himself, but when you were talking about sorcerers and magicians, these were not of God. Their impotence was to be shown in their ability or inability to do much as God punished Egypt with the ten plagues, as will become clear as we go along. The fourth situation is to show who was the only true God. to show who was the only true God. Being the only true God, he could have brought the children of Israel out of their captivity and freed them in any way he wanted, and so why were the 10 plagues necessary? Well, let us read Numbers 33, verse 4. The chapter subheading is Israel's Journey from Egypt Reviewed. Numbers 33, verse 4. For the Egyptians were burying all their firstborn, whom the Lord had killed among them. Also on their gods the Lord had executed judgments. From what we read about this period of time is that the absolute superiority of God is shown, and therefore all these other so-called gods are shown for what they were, just frauds. You would have thought that the people of Israel would have taken these lessons to heart, seeing all of these wonders that they saw. And yet we read that they moaned and complained and whinged in the wilderness, and many wanted to go back to Egypt, where food and water was difficult to come by. This must have given them amnesia, because the wonders that God had performed were miracles that only he had the power to do. However, what happened was known in other nations and made the Israelites feared by other people. Let us read an instance of this in Joshua 2, verses 8 to 11, where we read that Rahab in Jericho gave protection to the spies because of the reputation of the God of Israel. Joshua 2, verse 8. Now before they lay down, she came up to them on the roof and said to the men, I know that the Lord has given you the land, that the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land are faint-hearted because of you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were on the other side of the Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. And as soon as we heard these things, our hearts melted. Neither did there remain any more courage in anyone because of you, for the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and on earth below. The fifth area I would suggest, the fifth reason for the plague, was of course to free the people of Israel. Many may think that the wonders that were seen through the power of God's mighty power were just to free Israel from their bondage in Egypt. And whilst that was the aim, which of course succeeded, there were all these side issues that I've just discussed. To destroy the gods of Egypt, to defeat the Pharaoh of Egypt, who was himself considered a god, to show that the religious leaders who were impotent in the face of the true God, to show who was the only true God, and to free the nation of Israel. This showed the almighty power of God, who achieved a number of goals. Now, having set the scene, let us look at the 10 plagues. Pharaoh had been given a miraculous sign, with Aaron's rod being turned into a serpent, and when the religious men of Egypt did in like manner with their own enchantments, as we read, he saw Aaron's rod swallow up their rods. He had been warned, but his heart grew hard and he did not heed them. So we'll start in Exodus 7 and we'll spend quite a bit of time in this book. You might want to put a marker in your Bible so that you can keep referring back to it. Exodus 7, and we'll start in verse 19. We're breaking into the story a little bit, but these verses show the start of what would turn out to be 10 horrific plagues on Egypt. Exodus 7, verse 19. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, say to Aaron, take your rod and stretch out your hand over the waters of Egypt, over their streams, over their rivers, over their ponds, and over all their pools of water, that they may become blood. And there shall be blood throughout all the land of Egypt, both in buckets of wood and pitchers of stone. Verse 20. And Moses and Aaron did so, just as the Lord commanded. So he lifted up the rod and struck the waters that were in the river, in the sight of Pharaoh, in the sight of his servants. And all the waters that were in the river were turned to blood. The fish that were in the river died. The river stank, and the Egyptians could not drink the water of the river. So there was blood throughout all the land of Egypt. Then the magicians of Egypt did so with their enchantments. And Pharaoh's heart grew hard, and he did not heed them, as the Lord had said. And Pharaoh turned and went into his house, neither was his heart moved by this. So all the Egyptians dug all around the river for water to drink, because they could not drink the water of the river. And 7 days passed after the Lord had struck the river. From ancient times to the present, the Nile has been the lifeblood of Egypt. Transportation on the Nile led to widespread shipbuilding, and sea commerce was an important part of their economy. It was also vital for their agricultural life, bringing irrigation for crops and provided fish for the locals. The gods of Egypt were Khnum, the guardian of the river's source, Hapi, that sounds good, H-A-P-I, spirit of the Nile, Osiris, the Nile was his bloodstream, also Toret, Neith, Hathor, Chromis, and Sepek. So they had 8 gods that were involved. Quite an array of so-called deities, and all affected by the first plague. It would appear that the magicians did likewise, as we see in verse 22. Now, you would have thought that they would have tried to reverse the problems, not duplicate them, which was ridiculous. They tried to show Pharaoh that they could do the same as the God of Israel. It seemed to be all about their ego, not trying to eradicate the problems that the plague had caused, as we read in verse 21, that there was blood throughout the land of Egypt, which would have included Goshen, where the Israelites lived. The fish that were in the river stank. It must have been a putrid smell. You may recall that Pharaoh, in the first chapter of Exodus, verse 22, commanded all his people, saying, every son who is born you shall cast into the river, and every daughter you shall save alive. There is a law in place, as we read in Galatians 6, verse 7. I'll not turn there, but I think we all know it. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man sows, that shall he also reap. I saw that one commentator said that this verse could be translated along the following lines. Stop letting people lead you astray from the truth. You might try to turn up your nose at the law of God, but it won't change the law. It remains true that whatever you regularly and habitually sow, regardless of what it is, that is exactly what you will regularly and habitually reap. As male babies were thrown into the river much later, they pay the penalty when the Nile was turned red with blood, as had been the case with the death of those innocent male Israelite babies. Plague number one didn't succeed in freeing the Israelites, as it says in verse 23, that Pharaoh turned and went into his house, neither was his heart moved by this. Pharaoh hardened his heart again and again, and Israel stayed put. So on to the next miracle, which would strike at more Egyptian gods. Back to the book of Exodus, chapter 8 now, the first 7 verses, where we read about the second plague. Exodus 8, verse 1. And the Lord spoke to Moses, Go to Pharaoh and say to him, thus says the Lord, let my people go that they may serve me. But if you refuse to let them go, behold, I will smite all your territory with frogs. So the river shall bring forth frogs abundantly, which shall go up and come into your house, into your bedroom, on your bed, into the houses of your servants, on your people, into your ovens, and into your kneading bowls. Sounds pretty awful to me, that does. And the frog shall come upon you, on your people, and all your servants. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your hand with your rod over the streams, over the rivers, and over the ponds, and cause frogs to come up on the land of Egypt. So Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up and covered the land of Egypt. And the magicians did so with their enchantment, and brought up frogs on the land of Egypt. We again read that the magicians were at it, bringing up frogs, which was really to show that whatever the great God of Israel could do, they themselves could do. Quite how the magicians were able to do this is not explained, but it is clear that they couldn't remove this plague, and it stayed in place until it was God's time to remove it. Now, the presence of frogs in Egypt was not unusual, and the discoveries of amulets in the form of frogs give credence to their godlike status. An amulet is an object whose most important characteristic is the power ascribed to it to protect. It's supposed to protect its owner from danger or harm. Amulets are different from talismans, as a talisman is believed to bring luck or some other benefit, although it can offer protection as well. Superstition as well as worshipping the created. In verse 6 it says that the frogs covered the land of Egypt, which would include the land of Goshen in Egypt where the Israelites were. This was a judgment against both Hapi, a frog goddess, and Hekwet, the wife of the god Khnum, and was the frog-headed goddess of birth. I mean, this is crazy stuff, but this is what they had. Both related to fertility. This is interesting, as it would appear that the Egyptians were forced to kill the embodiment of the god Hekwet simply because they were so numerous in the land. I read that the frog was one of numerous animals that shouldn't be intentionally killed, and even the involuntary killing of a frog was often punished by death in Egypt, but not during this crisis. Nun, Kek, and Heh were Egyptian gods characterized as a man with a frog's head. These Egyptians certainly had fertile imaginations. But they were everywhere, as it says in verse 3. Into your house, into your bedroom, on your bed, into the houses of your servants, on your people, into your ovens and kneading bowls. That sounds truly awful. And with the frog's connection to the water supplies, they would have been continued to be robbed from clean drinking water. The Pharaoh said that he would let the children of Israel go. But again, as we know, he changed his mind, and he did that on many occasions. In verses 13 to 15, we read the following. Verse 13. So the Lord did according to the word of Moses, and the frogs died out of the houses, out of the courtyards, and out of the fields. They gathered them together in heaps, and the land stank. But when Pharaoh saw that there was relief, he hardened his heart and did not heed them, as the Lord had said. So again, Pharaoh hardened his heart, and Israel stayed put. So on to the next miracle, which would strike at even more Egyptian gods. Plague number 3, the lice. Let us now read Exodus 8, verses 16 to 19. I would say here that the lice is also translated elsewhere as dust and gnats. Let us read Exodus 8, verse 16. So the Lord said to Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your rod and strike the dust of the land so that it may become lice throughout the land of Egypt. Verse 17. And they did so, for Aaron stretched out his hand with his rod and struck the dust of the earth, and it became lice on man and beast. All the dust of the land became lice throughout all the land of Egypt. Now the magicians so worked with their enchantments to bring forth lice, but they could not. So there were lice on man and beast. Then the magicians said to Pharaoh, this is the finger of God. But Pharaoh's heart grew hard, and he did not heed them, just as the Lord had said. So we now read that the magicians could not bring forth lice, and this should have shown the Pharaoh, you would have thought, that they were no match for the true God, and they even admitted that this was the finger of God. They had been firmly and truly put in their place. And in verse 19, we see that Pharaoh's heart was hardened. It will be noted from verse 16 that this was throughout all the land of Egypt, and again that would include Goshen, where the Israelites lived. It appears that this was a plague against Geb, G-E-B, the great god of the earth, as the Egyptians believed, and the Egyptians gave offerings to this so-called deity for the bounty of the soil. In his book, Moses and the Gods of Egypt, Don J. Davis states the following on page 111. He writes, the priests in Egypt were noted for their physical purity. Daily rites were performed by a group of priests known as the Uab, U-A-B, or Pure Ones. Their purity was basically physical rather than spiritual. They were circumcised, shaved the hair from their heads and bodies, washed frequently, and they were dressed in beautiful linen robes. In the light of this, it would seem rather doubtful that the priesthood in Egypt could function very effectively, having been polluted by the presence of these insects. They, like their worshippers, were inflicted with the pestilence on this occasion. Their prayers were made ineffective by their own personal impurity with the presence of gnats on their bodies. Pharaoh hardened his heart, and again Israel stayed put. So let's go on to the next miracle, which would strike at more Egyptian gods. On to plague number four, the flies. Let's read Exodus 8, verses 20 to 24. Exodus 8, verse 20. And the Lord said to Moses, rise early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh as he comes out to the water. Then say to him, thus says the Lord, let my people go that they may serve me. Or else if you will not let my people go, behold, I will send swarms of flies on you and your servants and on your people and into your houses. The houses of the Egyptians shall be full of swarms of flies, and also the ground on which they stand. Verse 22. And in that day I will set apart the land of Goshen, in which my people dwell, that no swarms of flies shall be there, in order that you may know that I am the Lord in the midst of the land. I will make a difference between my people and your people. Tomorrow this sign shall be. And the Lord did so. Thick swarms of flies came into the house of Pharaoh, into his servants' houses, and into all the land of Egypt. The land was corrupted because of the swarms of flies. It's interesting to note that we read in verse 22 that God said that he would set apart the land of Goshen, in which my people dwell, that no swarm of flies shall be there. And that God made a separation between the Egyptians and the Israelites. A difference was to be made between the people of God and the Egyptians. So after the first three, the following seven were not applicable to God's people. One internet source stated that the idea of the flies comes from the Septuagint rendering dog fly, in which may carry some weight since those who translated the Septuagint lived in Egypt. The blood-sucking dog fly, the gadfly, was a great abhorrence and may be responsible for the blindness in the land. It might also be the Ichneumon fly, which deposits its larvae on living things so that it can feed. The Egyptians saw this as the manifestation of the god Uatchit, U-A-T-C-H-I-T. I wish they'd had names of gods that were a little more pronounceable, but they didn't. Many other insects may have been revered in the same way. It's also known that the fly in Egyptian mythology gave protection against disease or misfortune. Stone amulets in the form of flies were being made in Egypt as early as 3500 BC. The fly was depicted on various ritual artifacts, including the so-called magic wands, often carved from hippopotamus ivory and probably intended to protect the owner from harm. Also, Beelzebub is variously understood to mean Lord of the Flies, and Uatchit was the fly god of Egypt. Again, the false gods of Egypt were attacked by the one true god. However, there is another take on the word flies, which is worth mentioning. Apparently, the word flies was added by translators and isn't in the original Hebrew. In Kaufman's commentary on the Bible, we read, says, which brought swarms of insects upon the people was an effective challenge and defeat of a whole host of sacred insects, especially the large black dung beetle held sacred in ancient Egypt as a symbol of resurrection and fertility. As in the case of lice in Plague 3, it is by no means certain what these swarms were. The Hebrew word for swarms means a mixture and may signify the increase of all kinds of verminous scourges. Since the Egyptian pantheon included literally dozens of animals, birds and insects, any increase of living creatures of such dimensions as appeared in the plagues would have been a disgrace to some of their pagan deities. Whatever these swarms were, flies, insects and or dung beetles, you can be sure that the Egyptians would have had them as some sort of god. In verses 25 to 32 we read, the usual situation of Pharaoh hardening his heart, and they would have to go through more suffering before the children of Israel were allowed to leave. And so on to the next miracle, which would again strike at more Egyptian gods. Plague number 5, livestock were diseased. Livestock were diseased. Let's read this in Exodus chapter 9, the first 7 verses. Exodus 9, starting in verse 1. Then the Lord said to Moses, go into Pharaoh and tell him, thus says the Lord God of the Hebrews, let my people go that they may serve me. For if you refuse to let them go and still hold them, behold, the hand of the Lord will be on your cattle in the field, on the horses, on the donkeys, on the camels, on the oxen and on the sheep, a very severe pestilence. And the Lord will make a difference between the livestock of Israel and the livestock of Egypt, so nothing shall die of all that belongs to the children of Israel. Then the Lord appointed a set time, saying, tomorrow the Lord will do this thing in the land. So the Lord did this thing on the next day, and all the livestock of Egypt died. But of the livestock of the children of Israel, not one died. Then Pharaoh sent, and indeed not even one of the livestock of the Israelites was dead. But the heart of the Pharaoh became hard, and he did not let the people go. The Egyptians deified many of the animals in their land, and this could be seen as an attack against many of their gods. Ptah, Menevis, Hathor and Amon were Egyptian gods associated with bulls and cows. There was widespread death of all the livestock in the land of Egypt, but the Israelites were spared, as it states in verse 6, but of the livestock of the children of Israel, not one died. One source stated, a large number of bulls and cows were considered sacred, and many areas in Egypt chose them as their emblems. A temple was discovered in Memphis that contained the Apis bull, A-P-I-S, bull, which was considered the sacred animal of the god Ptah. There could be only one bull at one time in the temple, and it was identified as a deity by 28 physical marks, and it was fed delicacies. I suppose the bull was very pleased with all that sort of attention, but it was all ridiculous. In Memphis, 64 burial chambers were found, each containing a mummified Apis bull. According to Wikipedia, the Egyptian goddess was Hathor, who was often depicted as a cow, symbolizing her maternal and celestial aspect, although her most common form was a woman wearing a headdress of cow horns and a sun disc. She was also the symbolic mother of the earthly representatives, the pharaohs. These useless gods, derived from man's minds, were futile and pointless against the great God of the universe. Pharaoh hardened his heart again, as we know, and Israel stayed put. So on to the next miracle, which would strike at yet more Egyptian gods. Plague number 6, boils. And if you've ever had a boil, you know how painful they are. But this was boils in the plural. So Exodus 9 verse 8, where we see that ashes and dust cause these boils. Exodus 9 verse 8. So the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, take for yourselves handfuls of ashes from a furnace, and let Moses scatter it toward the heavens in the sight of Pharaoh. And it will become fine dust in all the land of Egypt, and it will cause boils that break out in sores on man and beast throughout all the land of Egypt. Then they took ashes and the furnace and stood before Pharaoh, and Moses scattered them toward heaven. And they caused boils that break out on sores on man and beast. And the magicians could not stand before Moses because of the boils, for the boils were on the magicians and on all the Egyptians. But the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, and he did not heed them, just as the Lord had spoken to Moses. Jameson Fawcett Brown Bible commentary states the following. Moses took ashes from the furnace, Hebrew brick kiln. The magicians, being sufferers in their own persons, could do nothing, though they had been called. And as the brick kiln was one of the principal instruments of oppression to the Israelites, it was now converted into a means of chastisement of the Egyptians, who were made to read their sin in their punishment. While the children of Israel experience all that goes with slavery, the ash from their work caused pain and suffering to their captors. What goes round comes round, again, comes to mind. It is interesting to note that the magicians could not stand before Moses because of this plague, and the boils were on the magicians, who suffered with the rest of the Egyptians, and they were powerless to help or to heal any of the others. The gods of Egypt here that were shown to be impotent were Sekhmet, the Egyptian goddess of epidemics, and Serapis and Imhotep, who were Egyptian gods of healing. So there wasn't much healing from the Egyptian side there. So on to the next miracle. There was one miracle after another. Plague number 7, which was hail and fire. Let's continue reading in Exodus 9, in verse 13. Exodus 9 verse 13. Then the Lord said to Moses, rise early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh and say to him, thus says the Lord God of the Hebrews, let my people go, and they may serve me. For at this time I will send all my plagues to your very heart, and on your servants, and on your people, that you may know that there is none like me in all the earth. But indeed, for this purpose I have raised you up, that I may show my power in you, and that my name may be declared in all the earth. And as yet you exalt yourself against my people, in that you will not let them go. Verse 18. Behold, tomorrow about this time I will cause very heavy hail to rain down, such as has not been in Egypt since its founding until now. Therefore send now and gather your livestock and all that you have in the field, for the hail shall come down on every man, on every animal which is found in the field and is not brought home, and they shall die. He who feared the word of the Lord among the servants of Pharaoh made his servants and his livestock flee to the houses. But he who did not regard the word of the Lord left his servants and his livestock in the field. Then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward heaven, that there may be hail on all the land of Egypt, on man, on beast, and on every herb of the field throughout the land of Egypt. And Moses stretched out his rod towards heaven. And the Lord sent thunder and hail, and fire darted to the ground, and the Lord rained hail on the land of Egypt. So there was hail and fire mingled with the hail, so very heavy that there was none like it in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. And the hail struck throughout the whole land of Egypt, all that was in the field, both man and beast, and the hail struck every herb of the field and broke every tree of the field. Only in the land of Goshen, where the children of Israel were, there was no hail. It appears that the following plagues will be more severe than the previous ones, as God says, I will send my plagues to your very heart. That was in verse 14. Pharaoh was even told that he was placed in his position by God, so that God could show his power and declare his name to all nations. Here God makes it very plain in verse 16 about his power, and the hail was going to kill people and animals. Verse 19 shows that Goshen, there was no hail. Now Egypt is not a country that gets a lot of rainfall. Wikipedia states that Egypt receives between 20 millimetres, that's 0.79 of an inch of rain, and 200 millimetres, that's 7.87 inches of rain, of annual average precipitation along the narrow Mediterranean coast. But south to Cairo, the average drops to nearly nothing, zero, in the central and southern part of the country. Hail coming down from the sky would have been an attack against Nut, N-U-T, the sky goddess. Nut was considered to be the mother of five other gods, Osiris, Hathor, Set, Isis, and Nephthys. Also, Shu was the goddess of the atmosphere. There would certainly have been a uniqueness for such a storm to happen in Egypt. Pharaoh again confessed his sin, but as we read in verse 34, and when Pharaoh saw that the rain, the hail, and the thunder had ceased, he sinned yet more. And he hardened his heart, he and his servants. Again, gods of Egypt were attacked with another miracle, but Pharaoh reverted to type. Plague 8, the locusts. Let's read Exodus 10, starting in verse 1, where we see that Moses and Aaron went in to see the Pharaoh, and after an exchange, they were driven out from Pharaoh's presence. Let us read Exodus 10, verses 12 to 15. Then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the land of Egypt for the locusts, that they may come upon the land of Egypt and eat every herb of the land, all that the hail has left. So Moses stretched out his rod over the land of Egypt, and the Lord brought an east wind on the land all that day and all that night. When it was morning, the east wind brought the locusts. And the locusts went up over all the land of Egypt and rested on all the territory of Egypt. They were very severe. Previously there had been no such locusts as they, nor shall there be such after them. Verse 15, for they covered the face of the whole earth, so that the land was darkened, and they ate every herb of the land, and all the fruit of the trees which the hail had left. So they remained nothing green on the trees or the plants of the field throughout the land of Egypt. It says in verse 15, the locusts were so numerous that the land was darkened. Now I've read, it's amazing really, that just one square mile can contain 100 to 200 million of these creatures. Huge numbers of locusts, and they can have a devastating effect. There were so many gods which would have been offered, would have been affected by this plague. Serapia was the Egyptian deity protector from locusts. Nepri, the god of grain. Ermutet, the goddess of childbirth and crops. Thermusis, the goddess of fertility and the harvest. And Seth, another god of crops. Pharaoh seemed to be having a change of heart, for we read in verses 17 to 20 in Exodus 10, the following chapter. We're still in Exodus 10. Let's read verses 17 to 20. Now therefore, please forgive my sin only this once, and entreat the Lord your God that he may take away from me this death only. So he went out from Pharaoh and entreated the Lord. And the Lord turned a very strong west wind, which took the locusts away and blew them into the Red Sea. There remained not one locust in all the territory of Egypt. But the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let the children of Israel go. Pharaoh again confessed his sin. He was very good at that, but his heart was again hardened, and Israel stayed put. So let's go on to the next miracle, which would strike at again more Egyptian gods. Plague number 9 was darkness. Darkness. Let's read Exodus 10, verses 21 to 23. Exodus 10, verse 21. Then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward heaven, that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt, darkness which may even be felt. So Moses stretched out his hand toward heaven, and there was a thick darkness in all the land of Egypt 3 days. They did not see one another, nor did anyone rise from his place for 3 days, but all the children of Israel had light in their dwellings. It appears that the chief deity in Egypt was Amon-Ra, who was the sun god. His wife Mut was the queen of all gods, and they had a son, Khons, the god of the moon. The sun god Ra was considered to be a great blessing for the land for his faithfulness in providing the warmth and light of the sun each day. Also in Egyptian mythology, Horus was the god of light. There were also other gods, Ptah, the one who created the moon, the sun and the earth, Atum, the god of the sunset, and Shu, the god of sunlight and air. What a plethora of gods they had. And these were subject to the plagues that God of Israel brought onto the land of Egypt. In fact, this plague will also have been a direct attack against Pharaoh, as he was considered the divine representation of the sun god Ra. We read in verse 23 that darkness was for 3 days, but the children of Israel had light in their dwellings. Now you would have thought that this divide between the Egyptians and the Israelites would have caused the Pharaoh to fully recognize the greatness of God, but that was not at this stage. Let's go to verse 24 and see Pharaoh's usual approach. Verse 24. Then Pharaoh called to Moses and said, go serve the Lord, only let your flocks and your herds be kept back. Let your little ones also go with you. But Moses said, You must also give us sacrifices and burnt offerings that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God. Verse 26. Our livestock shall also go with us, not a hoof shall be left behind, for we must take some of them to serve the Lord our God, and even we do not know with what we must serve the Lord until we arrive there. But the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he would not let them go. Then Pharaoh said to him, "Get away from me, take heed to yourself, and see my face no more, for in the day you see my face, you shall die." Pharaoh hardened his heart again, and Israel stayed put. So let's go on to the next miracle, which would strike at more Egyptian gods. Plague number 10, the death of the firstborn. The death of the firstborn. So we're now in Exodus 11, verses 1 to 6. Exodus 11, starting in verse 1. And the Lord said to Moses, "I will bring one more plague on Pharaoh and on Egypt. Afterwards, he will let you go from here. When he lets you go, he will surely drive you out of here altogether. Speak now in the hearing of the people, and let every man ask from his neighbor and every woman from her neighbor articles of silver and articles of gold." And the Lord gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. Moreover, the man Moses was very great in the land of Egypt, in the sight of Pharaoh's servants and in the sight of the people. Then Moses said, "Thus says the Lord, about midnight I will go out in the midst of Egypt, and all the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sits on his throne, even to the firstborn of the female servant who is behind the handmill, and all the firstborn of the animals. Then there shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt, such as was not like it before, nor shall be like it again." Verse 9 we read, "But the Lord said to Moses, Pharaoh will not heed you, so that my wonders may be multiplied in the land of Egypt." Then in chapter 12 is where the Passover was instituted, and the days of unleavened bread were introduced, those that we are, or have been for the last 7 days keeping. In verse 12 we read, "For I will pass through the land of Egypt on that night, and will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Lord." And then in verses 29 to 30 we read the death of the firstborn. "And it came to pass at midnight that the Lord struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on his throne to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of livestock. So Pharaoh rose in the night, he, all his servants, and all the Egyptians. There was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead." One commentator stated the following: "This plague was potentially more devastating than all of the other plagues combined. For the firstborn was not only the heir of a double portion of his father's inheritance, but represented special qualities of life. The law of primogeniture decreed that the firstborn son would inherit the major portion of a family estate when the father died. The death of the firstborn son would cripple a family legally and emotionally. This would have been humiliating to Isis, the winged goddess of fertility, Meshkenet, the goddess who presided at the birth of children, to Hathor, one of the seven deities who attended the birth of children, to Min, the god of procreation, to Selket, the guardian of life, and to Renunatet, the copper goddess and guardian of Pharaoh. Not only is this an attack against the gods, but also against the Pharaoh. It underlined his immortality through his inability to protect his son, who was a god as well, and it undermined his ability to provide unity and protection over the land of Egypt." We can read, as I mentioned earlier, in Exodus 1, that the Pharaoh at the time had all the newborn babies killed, the newborn baby boys. Now God killed the firstborn son of the Egyptians. Once again, as I mentioned before, the law of sowing and reaping must never be underestimated. What goes round comes round, as the old saying goes. If God had just got Israel out of Egypt in one fell swoop, with, say, just one plague or miracle, then not much would have been learned, and it could have been seen that everything could be as easy as that. And it isn't. Pharaoh had the power of life and death over the slaves, and he didn't want to lose such a mighty workforce. He thought he was all-powerful, but he couldn't resist the power of these plagues. It also showed the gods of Egypt were absolutely powerless against the one true God. This affected selectively the firstborn of man and livestock. Miracle after miracle, and after the death of the firstborn, Pharaoh let the children of Israel go after this tenth and final devastating plague. But he had a change of mind and followed after the Israelites, but again with devastating consequences. The loss of life in the Red Sea added further to the problems of Egypt. Now, he never seemed to learn any of the lessons that they should have done after seeing the might and power of the one true God. God had a special relationship with the Israelites. Today we have a special relationship with God as his people. Having looked at five reasons why the plagues took place, and then having looked at the ten plagues, another question arises. Why did God harden Pharaoh's heart? We must understand that Pharaoh was not an innocent or a godly man. He was, like many down through the ages, a dictator who was responsible for the slavery that the children of Israel had to endure. He was all-powerful in Egypt, where no one dared question his authority. Let us look at God's answer in the scriptures. First, let us read Exodus 9, verse 16. Now, we read this when reviewing the seventh plague of hail, but let's look at it again. Exodus 9, verse 16. Exodus 9, verse 16. But indeed, for this purpose I have raised you up, that I may show my power in you, and that my name may be declared in all the earth. God raised up Pharaoh and hardened Pharaoh's heart in order to promote his own glory. Let's look at Romans 9, verses 17 and 18. Romans 9, verse 17. Romans 9, verse 17. For the scripture says to Pharaoh, I raised you up for this very purpose, that I might display my power in you, and that my name might be proclaimed in all the earth. Therefore God has mercy on whom he wants to have mercy, and he hardens whom he wants to harden. Since the wages of sin is death, and Pharaoh and Egypt had horribly sinned against God, it would have been just if God had completely annihilated Egypt. Therefore, God's hardening Pharaoh's heart was not unjust, and his bringing additional plagues against Egypt was also not unjust. The plagues, as terrible as they were, actually demonstrated God's mercy in not completely destroying Egypt, which would have been a perfect and just penalty. Different commentators seem to be agreed, generally, that the Bible says that God hardened Pharaoh's heart. What it really means is that God simply facilitated a process that Pharaoh himself initiated. The Bible repeatedly also states that Pharaoh hardened his own heart. Before the first few plagues, Pharaoh hardened his own heart against letting the Israelites go. But when Pharaoh saw that there was relief, he hardened his heart. Pharaoh could have spared Egypt all of the plagues had he not hardened his heart. But God was giving Pharaoh increasingly severe warnings of the judgment. The judgment that was to come, and which came with some force. Pharaoh chose to bring judgment on himself and on his nation by hardening his own heart against God's commands. In their book, when critics ask, Geisler and Howe state the following: God, in his omniscience, foreknew exactly how Pharaoh would respond, and he used it to accomplish his purpose. God ordained the means of Pharaoh's free but stubborn action. In short, it's obvious that God takes the question of sin very seriously, but God is patient with us as we strive to grow and overcome. If we put ourselves in the situation where God is trying to get our attention, do we really listen? Pharaoh didn't listen. He didn't listen to God at all. He turned him down on 10 different occasions. But we must be different. In the world, obedience is a word that is not appreciated. But God requires this of us, not just belief. The true God is in charge, and that is why we must put him before anyone or anything else. It was interesting to review this whole episode, and there is much information available on the internet, and I've quoted from quite a few sources their research on these matters. But there's so much more than 1 hour sermon would allow. As we keep the Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread each year, as we have just been doing, we can review what happened in Egypt and be comforted that God does look after his very own people. As carnal human beings, it is not in our human nature to follow God. In fact, we can be a tiny little bit like Pharaoh, stubborn and difficult at times. And I'm not pointing the fingers at anyone. If I did, I'd be pointing three back at me. But we can all be stubborn and difficult at times. Our human nature is contrary to the way of God. But after we have been called and baptized, we learn and understand more about the ways of God. We keep the Passover and the Days of Unleavened Bread as part of God's holy day calendar on an annual basis. These were kept by the New Testament church as we keep them today. We are told to examine ourselves before taking the New Testament Passover so that we can take this in a worthy manner, not that we ourselves are worthy. As a final reference today, please turn to 1 Corinthians 5, verses 6 to 8. 1 Corinthians 5, verses 6 to 8. Your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Therefore, purge out all the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened. For indeed, Christ our Passover was sacrificed for us. Therefore, let us keep the feast, not with the old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. Christ our Passover was sacrificed for us, and we are instructed to keep the feast, not with old leaven, but with the leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. Hopefully we've been doing this for the last 7 days and will continue to do it for the rest of our lives. This way we will follow the instructions and requirements of God, unlike the Pharaoh of Egypt, who showed contempt for what God wanted and with disastrous consequences.